temperature pretty much on a par with where we were today. 5 to 10 should cover it. For Northern Ireland, heavy showers right from the word go. The odd rumble of thunder couldn't be ruled out. Again, I suspect the heaviest of the showers will be found during the course of the morning. Drier at conditions in the afternoon. A high of 6 degrees. And for Scotland, again, you guessed it, sunny spells and showers. But the Northern Isles, very wet, very windy indeed. And a high of 8. I wish you a peaceful night.
Where was that lowest daytime max again, Phil?
Drumna Drocket.
Lovely. Thank you very much.
Aye.
So now, on Radio 4, more from the story of an English woman caught in occupied France. She's free from internment. And will the discovery of new documents cast light on events?
Gillian Sutro heard a taxi draw up outside her home in Mayfair. Priscilla was carrying a suitcase, wearing a navy polka dot frock. "She looked beautiful," recalled Gillian. "I rushed out, and we fell into each other's arms. I still remember her first words. I got out just in time. In the euphoria of our retrouvée, I hadn't time to ponder her words. Why the hurry after the Nazi departure? What was Pris fleeing from?" Priscilla was evasive about her activities after her release from the Besançon camp. So what was she doing between the spring of 1941 and the autumn of 1944? I had hoped the contents of her padded chest would tell me. I was mistaken. All that the letters made clear was that Priscilla had had a relationship with a Frenchman called Daniel soon after her release from Besançon, and then, or at the same time, with men called Emile, Pierre, and Otto, who sounded German. But as to who they were, I had no answer. Then, in the special collections room of the Bodleian Library, I noticed a reference to a Sutro collection bequeathed by Gillian. 3 specific boxes related to my aunt. She was never in a concentration camp, like Nicholas Shakespeare writes in his piece in the Telegraph magazine. Besançon, Gillian wrote angrily, was an internment camp. But the mistake had a combustive effect, uncorking a lifetime of suspicions about my aunt. Since reading the brazen lies she told her journalist writer nephew, I have no scruples over telling the truth about her life and war record in occupied France. Brazen lies? The truth about her life? Priscilla had been dead for 10 years. All their lives they had been the best of friends. "The occupation period has always been my obsession," Gillian wrote. Priscilla did not wish to talk about the occupation. With persistence, I managed to drag some facts from her. These, plus a book on the occupation giving certain names, helped me to find out what Priscilla did not want me to know. She went on. "What I find sad is that the childhood friend I had loved never existed. I was sorry for Pris, never realizing that it was like being sorry for a cobra." Listed in a small red notebook entitled Pris were intimate details of my aunt's life and loves. Priscilla had been expelled from Besançon into a France where an exhilarated Germany looked triumphant. A huge V hung on the Eiffel Tower. On Saturdays, her husband Robert arrived from Bois Grimaud. But now Priscilla was exasperated by Robert's morose inertia. It was not simply that she blamed him for Besançon and for not giving her children. After so long a drought, she wanted flavour. According to what Priscilla told Gillian, Daniel Vernier was the man who helped her the most. The occupation had its own morality. Priscilla's on-again, off-again relationship with Vernier reflected the ambiguity of the times. She decided to end her double life with him shortly after meeting his wife Simone. Tall and blonde, Simone was a dead ringer for my aunt. "We liked each other immediately," Priscilla admitted. I didn't want to break up their marriage. She informed both Vernier and Robert that she was going to escape back to England through Spain. On the morning of the 20th of May, 1942, leaving behind all her possessions, Priscilla climbed onto her bicycle and disappeared. Why, then, was Priscilla still in Paris in October 1944? The likeliest reason, she was in love. Émile Cornet was known on the Grand Prix circuit as Le Baron Belge. Invincible in the strength of her infatuation, she forgot her married lover, her husband, the police. Robert and Daniel Vernier believed that Priscilla had escaped to Spain. In fact, Cornet had found them a very nice flat in a short cobbled street near the Étoile. The address, Rue Lord Byron, was in the heart of Nazi Paris. Embedded in one of Cornet's letters was a reference to Max Stocklin. He was to prove the one loose strand poking up from which unravelled the sulphurous underworld of the French Gestapo. The person who looked up at me from his mugshot was clean-shaven, darkly handsome, aged about 45. Almost all I knew about Max Stocklin was that he was sentenced for espionage and collaboration in January 1946. Might a record exist of his trial? Through Max Stocklin, I had found her. The survival of Priscilla's police dossier was, everyone agreed, a piece of luck. The documents comprised 6 letters from the French police, 1 from the SS, and an interview conducted by a senior French policeman, Roger Lemur. Priscilla was a despicable example of everything a French woman should not be. A childless and unemployed adulteress who had deserted an adoring husband to live with a highly suspect lover. So why did the senior French official in charge of investigating Priscilla go out of his way not to prosecute her? Roger Lemur's report betrayed his sympathies. Douanel de la Saucerie is a jaded man who can hardly give great satisfaction to his young wife. Had he joined that line of men who were moved to shield Priscilla? Or was he acting under orders? It looked as if Priscilla had a protector. From his headquarters at Rue Lord Byron, Max Stocklin was an important agent in a hugely profitable Europe-wide operation called Bureau Otto, into which he enticed Émile Cornet and, by extension, Priscilla. It was Stocklin who enabled the couple to live well. The relationship was intimate enough for Stocklin to summon Cornet to provide the character reference at his prosecution. At his trial, Stocklin insisted, "I spied before the war, it's true, but after the armistice I was just a black market collaborator." But his black market dealings constituted Stocklin's gravest crime. Bureau Otto existed to strip France of everything that Germany's war effort required. But did Priscilla know? Cornet was a violent and possessive man, and Priscilla felt powerless to break her Belgian lover's stranglehold. But Vernier wanted him out of the way. The Gestapo came for Cornet early on a cold day in March 1943. Priscilla heard their footsteps on the stairs, grabbed her coat, and left by the porte de service on the first floor. There's a simple explanation for why Gillian failed to contact my aunt during the occupation. In the spring of 1943, Priscilla went underground with a changed name. Gillian was the only one to whom Priscilla confided her wartime persona. Through a very rich lover called Daniel Vernier, she obtained an identity which was the exact replica of Daniel's wife, Simone, who was also fair and blue-eyed. He pretended his wife had lost her papers, so there were 2 Simone Verniers. At first glance, I found it embarrassing to discover what Priscilla got up to. Of course I wished for my aunt to be heroic. I wanted her to be an exception. But she was not an exception. She was an ordinary woman in extraordinary circumstances. The main thing was to live and not to get into trouble. Except that she did get into trouble. Now that Daniel Vernier had banished Corneille and secured Priscilla a new identity in his wife's name, he was desperate to resume their affair. Priscilla was in no position to bargain. All of a sudden, Emile Corneille was telephoning her. She had not seen him since the morning when she heard the Gestapo coming up the stairs. Without a word to Vernier, Priscilla bicycled to Corneille's hotel. He was ill and had abscesses all over his back. She stayed and nursed him for 3 days. Deliberately, she had left behind her French identity card in the name of Simone Vernier. The Gestapo had warned Corneille, upon ejecting him the first time, that if he set foot in France again, he would be shot. How petrified both must have been at the appearance of two men in SS uniforms who entered his hotel room and levelled submachine guns. Priscilla and Corneille were driven to the Gestapo headquarters in Rue des Saussayes. Corneille was cross-examined and transferred to a cell in Fresnes. Priscilla was questioned closely for nearly 2 days. Then suddenly, and wholly unexpectedly, released. Julian Sutro believed that someone very high up had arranged matters with the Gestapo. In her opinion, the evidence pointed to another lover of Priscilla, who, in the photograph that I had seen in my aunt's papers, sat waiting for her beside a warm fireplace in an apartment hung with impressionist oil paintings. The man who signed himself in his only surviving letter to her, Otto. Printed at the top of his letter to Priscilla was a name, Otto Graebener. It appeared in no history of the occupation. Then, in the National Archives in Kew, I found a trace. The confidential report was about looted art in occupied territories, dated the 4th of December 1944. I was permitted to read it in a locked room. The report concerned a wanted German banker, Alois Miedl, who, in August 1944, was stopped by Free French officers on the Franco-Spanish border. The report said he and a companion named Otto Graebener were arrested by the Maquis. Otto Graebener's identity unravelled from a single loose strand, as had Max Stocklin's. His solitary mention in a file in Kew led me to another confidential report in the National Archives in Washington, and to a filing card in the same Paris Police Archives where I had found Priscilla's dossier. Document by document, his cover peeled back. A reddish-haired man with different coloured eyes, and dressed in an elegant, double-breasted grey worsted suit and spats. This was Priscilla's lover, Otto Graebener, who ran a section of Bureau Otto specialising in the traffic of looted art. The circumstances of their arrest indicated that Otto Graebener and Alois Miedl were thicker than average thieves. Miedl positioned Priscilla and her German lover just one step away from Göring, Hitler's second-in-command. Priscilla took a pragmatic attitude to this educated German who had galloped to her rescue. She accepted Graebener's gifts, his exquisite cigarettes and couture dresses. She stayed with Graebener in between his business trips to Spain and Germany, on the understanding that he shielded her from the Gestapo. Her heart was not scratched, but that was soon to change.
Nicholas Shakespeare was reading from his book Priscilla, and the producer is Duncan Minchell. Tomorrow, it's D-Day. This is Radio 4. Shall we go sailing? And now the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Friday the 17th of January. There are warnings of gales in Viking, North Utsira, South Utsira, Forties, Fisher, Thames, Dover, Wight, Portland, Plymouth, Biscay, Trafalgar, Fitzroy, Seoul, Shannon, Rockall, Fair Isle, Faroes and Southeast Iceland. The general synopsis at 1800, low, 170 miles south of Iceland, 979, expected just west of Bailey, 977, by 1800 on Friday. Lows, Fastnet, 978, and Faroes, 980, losing their identities. The area forecasts for the next 24 hours.